From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today, On Deadline is looking at the ongoing challenges to reproductive health care 2 years after the can of worms was uncorked when Supreme Court justices decided to overturn Roe v. Wade with their decision in the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health case. Last week, the Supreme Court issued another ruling on abortion, this time striking down a challenge to the abortion medication mifepristone. The court ruled in a 9-0 decision that the medication could stay on the market. This ruling came as a new report found that more than 171,000 patients traveled to another state last year to receive an abortion. That's because they couldn't get care in the state where they lived. Many have warned that this situation could have gotten even worse had the court not ruled against the challenge to mifepristone. As the ruling preserves access to medication abortion, which actually accounts for 63% of all abortions in the U.S. After the Food and Drug Administration eliminated a requirement that forced patients to pick up these pills in person, they've become more commonly prescribed online and mailed to patients. While a lot of people are celebrating the decision from the Supreme Court, others are wondering what went into the ruling, as it came from the same justices who voted to strike down Roe v. Wade just 2 years ago. That decision opened the floodgates to challenges against what many view as a woman's basic right. To share more on how the court looked at the law, Tom Giovanetti, the president of the Institute for Policy Innovation in Dallas, joined Odyssey.
I think that this Supreme Court understands that there's a difference between policy preferences and what's actually legal. So you literally have a Supreme Court where the majority a couple years ago overturned Roe v. Wade. Now, today you had a unanimous decision where they said the plaintiffs who were trying to do away with access to abortion drugs did not have standing. So what you have right now is a Supreme Court that is being very, very consistent with regard to the Constitution. What they're saying is that there's a difference between what the Constitution allows and what people's personal preferences are. So if you're a pro-lifer, you can't use the law to force your preferences on other people. What you have to do is you have to persuade them of your belief. But you can't use the law to force your preferences on them. And that was also the implication of the fact that the Supreme Court overturned Roe in the Dobbs decision. What they were saying is if you are pro-choice, you can't use the law to enforce your preferences on everybody else either.
A lot of critics have claimed that the Supreme Court is overly conservative. What would you think they are based on something like today's decision?
But I would describe this Supreme Court as more libertarian. I mean, their attitude is we are going to take a minimalistic approach. We're going to say this is what the Constitution demands, and everything else is sort of up for grabs. And if you want to, you know, the states get, you know, on abortion, the states get to determine their regimes. We are not going to step in and impose a regime on the country. So, in my view, the court that passed Roe v. Wade was an activist court that imposed its views on the country. And the court that undid Roe v. Wade is a court that is saying, look, you folks have to work this out for yourselves. Don't look to us to solve this problem for you. And I think that's what they did today.
And because of that, they have a very clear opinion on the abortion is a right argument.
It seems clear to me that because abortion is not mentioned in the Constitution, it falls under the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, which is that is reserved to the states and to the people. And so if New York wants to have a very, very generous abortion provision, and if Alabama wants to have a very narrow, restricted abortion situation, that is entirely constitutional. I mean, the genius of America is that we allow for this kind of experimentation between states, we allow for a large degree of individual liberty, and we allow for voice and exit. You have voice, you can participate in the political process, and if you don't feel like things have gone your way in the political process, then you can exit. You can go somewhere else. And that's about as good a definition of individual liberty as I've ever come up with.
Essentially, what the court did was decide that the group of doctors who were against the abortion medication had no legal standing. Now the same advocacy groups that were criticizing the Supreme Court just 24 months ago offered praise after this ruling was released. But they still say that the fight isn't done. Among those groups was Planned Parenthood, Gilda Gonzalez, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Northern California, joined Odyssey to share her organization's thoughts on the recent ruling.
What's your reaction, considering it is a ruling, but not necessarily on the actual medication, just the merits of the suit by the people who actually lack standing to even bring it in the first place?
So it is an immediate reprieve, but as you said, that this case is not over, and it actually reverts back to the same district court judge, Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, who has already tried to upend the FDA's approval of mifepristone. So the fight is not over.
And also, the way I understand it, the fight was never extended to the states who have already put separate restrictions on the pill. More than a dozen states have already done that. It does not undo that.
That is correct. So Kansas, Missouri, and Idaho in particular can claim standing, and we'll have to monitor that in the coming days and weeks and months to see if there's some traction around that.
It's so interesting that they can have standing since they don't, in Judge Kavanaugh's ruling, the plaintiffs do not prescribe to mifepristone, and they desire to make a huge drug less available to others who have standing to sue. So do these states, would they have standing in the long run?
It's hard to tell because right now they are now have that opportunity to go to this anti-abortion judge, Judge Kaczmarek, who already allowed for this case to go forward, a case that we believe strongly should have never had the light of day. So I think in this new world that we're in, anything is possible. So I think we cannot let our guard down, and we continue to monitor all and every case and argument that's being made.
In this new world, as you described it, what worries you most? What are you worried about next?
I'm worried about the clear, dangerous agenda that is being perpetrated by anti-abortion politicians and judges. And I think that they are infringing upon women and other people's capacity to have body autonomy, which goes to the core of our democracy, and that is freedom. And so I have many worries, and I think anybody who cares about reproductive freedom should carry these same worries.
Abortion isn't the only reproductive-related issue that has seen legal challenges lately. IVF is also in the crosshairs. IVF, or in vitro fertilization, is a process that involves fertilizing an egg with sperm in a laboratory dish. The practice is used in situations where traditional means of achieving pregnancy aren't possible, especially cases where people struggle with infertility. However, the practice is now in jeopardy as lawmakers at the state and federal level are looking to restrict it. With the recent Supreme Court ruling, many are looking for answers as to how it will affect IVF. Rutgers law professor Kimberly Hutcherson joined Odyssey to share just that.
We also have concerns about in vitro fertilization now. So the Senate Democrats are looking to guarantee access to that nationwide. Alabama Supreme Court a few weeks back ruled frozen embryos are children. Anyone who destroys them can be liable for wrongful death. Do you see IVF being in jeopardy right now in a legal sense?
I think it's absolutely in jeopardy, and I think it has been for a long time. Lots of the folks who are against abortion in this country are people who believe that life begins at conception. And if that's the case, then an embryo is no different than a fetus at 5 months gestation, and that is no different than a five-year-old sitting in a kindergarten classroom. And so if you know anything about assisted reproduction and IVF, you know that there are lots of embryos that get destroyed as part of that process. And again, if you believe an embryo is no different than a kindergartner, then the destruction of those embryos, which happens every day in this country, is something that you are going to have a lot of issue with. And that's what we were seeing in Alabama, and that's what potentially we're going to see in some other states as well.
Professor, big picture before we let you go here, where are we headed in this country when it comes to reproductive rights? What are you seeing developing?
I think we're headed backwards. I think that we are headed towards a world in which this country is really trying to control who gets to be pregnant, who has to stay pregnant, who gets to become a parent. And for me, at least, that's definitely not the direction that I think that we should be moving in, that is not the way we tend to think of what it means for somebody to be able to form a family. That's a very private thing that folks do. And the idea that the government is now going to be in our bedrooms, it's going to be in our doctor's offices, I think that is something that should concern everyone.
What's the general argument against mifepristone in these cases?
The general argument that was being made here is that, at least in this case, was that the FDA basically didn't do their due diligence before they approved mifepristone for the first time well over 20 years ago. And then as they made changes to the regulations related to mifepristone over the years, that they again didn't do the kind of research that they should have done before they made those changes. All of that ultimately really doesn't make sense. Mifepristone had been on the market in other countries years before it came to the United States. A lot of the requirements that existed in the U.S. were really political. They weren't about public health. They weren't about medicine and science. And so that was really the argument here, that the FDA hadn't done its job.
With all this going on, reproductive rights are being seen as a top issue for the upcoming election season. Democrats continue to call for federal legislation to protect abortion rights, and Republicans call for legislation that would do the opposite. How much does this issue really weigh on the minds of voters? Well, here's some data. On the one-year anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling that overturned the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, 6 in 10 voters remained opposed to the court's removing of the federal protections on the right to abortion. That's according to results from a new national NBC News poll. Nearly 80% of female voters ages 18 to 49, two-thirds of suburban women, 60% of independents, and even a third of Republican voters said they disapproved of overturning those protections. Experts say that the campaign for current President Joe Biden in particular sees abortion as an issue that can mobilize female voters. And polls seem to back them up. They continue to show that Americans say abortion is an important issue and that it will have an effect on their choices come Election Day. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.